Hello and welcome. Tonight we're going to wrap up our semester with our last lectures on commercial paper, negotiable instruments, something which has been categorized as payment systems. And we're going to talk about tonight negotiable instruments, defenses to payments, and lastly about checks and fund transfers. Fund transfers are electronic transfers as opposed to paper transfers. Last time we opened on negotiable instruments, we talked about what they were, gave you definitions on them. We talked about the parties to a negotiable instrument. We gave you definitions for those. And we talked about negotiability, transferring that negotiable instrument. We talked about the warranties that are made, and we wrapped up with our case on Manhattan Savings versus National Exchange, which talked about the elements of commercial paper, what its nature is, and the importance of a holder in due course. Tonight, we're going to talk about overall finishing up, wrapping up the definitions of holders and holders in due course, assignees, and the rights of the parties. We're going to talk about defenses to payment when that negotiable instrument doesn't have to be paid and when it does. And lastly, we're going to finish up with checks and funds transfers and then finish our case, Sabine v. Payne, which related to the value of holders in due course. And this is our last series of lectures. I'm going to miss you all. I really wish that this semester had been able to be live. I love being with all of you as students, but you know, we do the best we can with the circumstances we're all living under. And hopefully we'll be able to see you in another course face-to-face so that I can directly be there with you and enjoy your company. Let's get started. We went through definitions before, but remember, these definitions and how negotiable instruments work all come out of Article 3 of the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, as we discussed last time. The UCC is a state statute. It's in New York state law. It's referred to as the New York State Uniform Commercial Code. It is based upon a national model that came in. It's been enacted in almost every single state, almost identically. There are some tweaks here and there in individual states. The only state that really hasn't adopted it identically is Louisiana. One of the reasons is they are not a common law state. They are based on French law originally, and as a result, they kind of went their own way on a lot of things, and their state law is based on French codification, and as a result, they do things a little bit differently in Louisiana, but still, they do have a version of the Uniform Commercial Code, not exactly like what we do. The rest of the states have almost adopted it together. And under that statute, you have seen that Article 3 talks about negotiable instruments, defines what they are, and it defines negotiation. That means the transfer of these instruments. And you have four of them, as you know. You have promissory notes. You have certificates of deposits. You have drafts, and you have checks. And as we discussed in our case last time, bond is a form of a promissory note, because what it is it is a document, it is a piece of commercial paper that promises to pay a lender a specified amount and interest rate over time at a specific date. Can be bearer paper, can be paid to the order of someone. And that was one of the natures of the case that we did last time. And definitions of the people who are the ones who are in possession of that commercial paper, that negotiable instrument, there's three. An assignee is the third party to whom the contract benefits are transferred. The holder is the person who's actually someone in possession of the negotiable instrument, and it runs to that person. They're the one who can cash it, if you will. Because remember, what is the nature of a negotiable instrument? It is a substitute for cash. Then you have elevated above a holder is a holder in due course. And that is a special holder who takes the instrument in by giving value for it. They have taken the instrument in good faith. They have no knowledge that it will not be paid or that it is overdue to be paid. And they have no knowledge of any defenses that can be raised with respect to the instrument. A holder in due course, because they are that special requirements, is afforded special rights and a special status, as we saw in our case last time. What are the rights of the parties in negotiable instruments? An ordinary holder of commercial paper is the party in possession of the instrument that runs to them. An instrument that runs to a party means it is payable to their order or is bearable bearer paper, which they can cash in, and it's endorsed over to him or her. The rights of an ordinary holder, they have all the rights given through the instrument. They have the right to be paid. They have the right to discharge, release, and recovery. Now, an assignee of a negotiable instrument is a third party to whom the contract benefits of the negotiable instrument are transferred. And an assignee has all the rights given through and under the negotiable instrument too, just like a holder. The rights of the assignee are no different than the rights of an ordinary holder. Accordingly, the assignee is in the same position and the same rights as an ordinary holder. So an example of this is if a carpenter who signed a note to pay for his tools has a warranty problem with the tools, he has a defense of payment on that note. Anyone who has assigned that note as an assignee or a holder is subject to the carpenter's defense. Okay. Holders in due course. A holder in due course of commercial paper, as we said before, is a special kind of holder. They've given value for the instrument. They've taken the instrument in good faith, and they have no knowledge that it will not be paid, or what we call dishonored. They have no knowledge that it's overdue. They have no knowledge of any defenses or adverse claims with respect to the instrument. The rights of a holder in due course, they have all the rights given through the negotiable instrument, just like a holder, but they have additional rights. The law gives the holders in due course special rights and protects them from certain defenses. There's certain defenses that can be used against holders, and there's certain defenses that can only be used against a holder in due course. Those rights that can be used against a holder in due course also can be used against the defense that can be used against a holder in due course can be used against a holder, but not all defenses against a holder can be used by a holder in due course. To obtain the preferred status of a holder in just due course, the person must be a holder. You can't just be an assignee. The preferred status of holder in due course also requires the additional standards that we've just gone through. They take the note or the draft or the check free of the standard contract defenses that are good against ordinary holders. they don't take it absent the universal defenses, and we'll talk about that. Now, elements required for a holder in due course, they must give value for the instrument. That means they must pay for it or give something of value for it. That means they can work for it. You know, you can get it as payment for services rendered. But the just like consideration, the value that is paid is immaterial. It, the mere fact that you have a value for it, that you give value for it, that's all that matters, okay? Value is defined as consideration. And as with consideration, the value is immaterial, okay? But you have to give value for it. You have to take the instrument in good faith. Good faith is defined as the absence of knowledge of any defects in or problems with respect to the negotiable instrument. It's as simple as that. You take it not knowing there's any problems. Bad faith, conversely, is defined as dishonesty of belief or purpose. Now, there's something called the close connection doctrine. This doctrine occurs when by circumstantial evidence, such as the ongoing of a close relationship, then you do not presume good faith. When you take the, if you have a very close connection with the transferor, then that could raise an issue whether or not you took it in good faith. Examples include consumer transactions when the holder is a company that regularly does business with the other company or has constant contacts with them. And this close connection doctrine applies in circumstances that indicate a problem with the instrument. It's an exception, not a big one, but it arises when that good faith issue is one where you don't really know that they took it in good faith, and it's presumed if you have that very close connection, you may not have taken it in good faith. But overall, good faith is simply defined as I didn't know or have reason to believe that there was any defect in the paper. You must take the instrument without knowledge that it'll be dishonored or overdue. And you don't have to do investigations on this. And that was discussed in our case last week. You don't have to investigate who originally had the document, the negotiable instrument. You don't have to negotiate how they got it or anything. If, as long as you do not know, it's a lack of knowledge here. And as long as you don't know that, you're protected. But so you don't have to do investigations to get that knowledge. But if that knowledge comes to your attention, or if by the face of the document itself, the commercial paper itself, there's some kind of indication that there's a problem, then you have a issue with taking it without knowledge that it was dishonored or overdue. If the date shows that it's overdue, then you have knowledge it's overdue. If it is been given to you and the person said, I don't know if it's good, I don't know if they'll pay on this, that's perhaps knowledge that it will be dishonored and you won't be a holder in due course. But if you take it absent that knowledge, you can be. And lastly, you must take the instrument without knowledge of any defenses or adverse claims. This too can be seen from the negotiable instrument itself, as long as it's absent that. But lack of knowledge of adverse claims requires that a holder must not be aware that the instrument is subject to defenses or adverse claims. As long as you don't know that, again, you don't have to do investigations, but as long as you don't know that, as long as that wasn't communicated to you, then you're a holder in due course. That's it for our definitions and our parties. We're now going to move next time over to the issues of our, I'll show you. We're going to move next time over to defenses of payment, moving into defenses and liability issues regarding that. But remember, the holders and holders in due course, the holders get defenses that you would get in an ordinary contract. Holders in due course aren't subject to those defenses. And we're going to talk next time about those defenses and what they are. And thanks so much for joining us. We're looking forward to seeing you next time.